And welcome back. Linda Moulton Howe with us with her special series of reports. And she's got a couple more dandies for us when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. Linda Moulton Howe with us. And Linda, this story here, this one captured my imagination. So I'll let you pick it up. Go ahead.
Well, I would like to urge all Coast listeners and Earth Files viewers, if you can, go to your computer and go to earthfiles.com so that you can look at the images and the illustrations and hear the audio on these reports about CIA manipulation of Hollywood productions about UFOs. And I'm doing them in two parts. Part one is Hangar 18 that was released in 1980, and part two is some of Hangar 18 and a contrast with The Day the Earth Stood Still that was released in 1951, two very important films that may be giving us insights about why our government keeps the policy of denial that it does. Now, at the very top of part one, I have a MP3 that is an excerpt of Darren McGavin, who is the actor playing the lead role in Hangar 18 that was released in July 1980.
Late actor. I think he passed away, too.
Yes. Yeah. And this was a film that was produced and released by Sun, spelled S-U-N-N, Classic Pictures, with a big pyramid and a rising sun as their logo. And in this MP3, which I would urge you all to listen, it goes right to the heart of what that Hangar 18 movie ended up basically taking an ET story, government cover-up, all kinds of violence, and boiling it down to this. Darren McGavin is talking with some of his colleagues, and he says, Kelso has deciphered the aliens' language. This is a report of a previous visit of the spacemen to Earth. This report speaks of the capture, the training, and the use of certain animals as slaves, both male and female. The slaves worship them as gods. And then what they refer to as animals were prehumans. The report also speaks to the fact that the female slaves found it a great honor to be chosen to live with and bear the offspring of the gods. So you see, it is no coincidence that the spacemen are almost identical to us. It is not a case of two species developing, evolving independently of each other. Those ancient spacemen altered forever our evolution. They are the missing link. We, mankind, the human race, are their children, close quote. Well, since 2008, I have interviewed UK independent scholar Robbie Graham, who's now 31, about his research into probable CIA manipulation of Hollywood productions about UFOs, including this Hangar 18 and The Day the Earth Stood Still. Now, Robbie's deep interest in studying what intelligence and counterintelligence manipulation behind the scenes of Hollywood productions about UFO-related movies began after he received a first-class honors degree in film, TV, and radio from Staffordshire University in 2003. And then in 2006, Robbie received a master's degree with distinction from the University of Bristol. And by December 2008, I interviewed Robbie and his research colleague, Matthew Alford, about their investigations of CIA UFOs in Hollywood, first reported in a December 17th, 2008 Earth Files, and I also did a Coast report with them at that time. Currently, Robbie Graham is writing a book about UFOs in Hollywood entitled Silver Screen Saucers, Sorting Fact from Fantasy in Hollywood's UFO Movies.
I like that.
Yeah, it's going to be a great book, I know, and I'll let you know as soon as it's out.
Okay.
Robbie also produces the website silverscreensaucers.com. A month ago, he contacted me about a report he has produced entitled Hangar 18, the CIA, and the Mormon Church. He has given me permission to reprint this article in its entirety, which I am going to do in a part three following our interview about strong connections that Robbie has found between people and events from Cold War propaganda, the CIA, the American Security Council, the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, and using Hollywood movies to both test and condition unwitting American audiences to the reality of other life in the universe that can interact with Earth both positively and negatively. Here now is Robbie Graham from Surrey, England.
Hangar 18 seems very far ahead of its time in terms of ufological conspiracy theory. What I tend to do with films of this nature is look at the production history. What's gone on during the production? Who has produced it? What's the studio that's responsible for it? Who are the key players behind it? Now, in this case, what I found was that Hangar 18 was produced by an independent film company set up in 1970 called Sun Classic Pictures, and was actually owned by the Schick Razor Company. Now, the name that stands out is a guy called Patrick J. Frawley Jr. Frawley was an extremely wealthy businessman who funded lots of ultra-right-wing organizations throughout the Cold War, and these included the American Security Council, which was a very powerful lobbyist for the military-industrial complex. Frawley was this very proud member of the Security Council, along with the likes of Nathan Twining, who was also a member of the Security Council. He's an alleged Majestic 12 member. General Douglas MacArthur, who have made very strange statements about planetary wars in the 1960s. And James Jesus Angleton, CIA's counterintelligence chief from 54 to 75. So all of these guys were sitting with Frawley on the board of the American Security Council. Now, Frawley, he was the owner of Schick Razors for many, many years. And Schick Razors owned Sun Classic Pictures. So there seems to be a direct link between a very influential man who was also connected to the CIA in the form of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, often referred to as the Knights of Malta, a very secretive organization. And Frawley was a member of the Knights of Malta, along with the likes of, not at the same time, but over the years, CIA directors who were members of the Knights of Malta, and these included William Casey, John McCone, George Bush Sr., Wild Bill Donovan, who was the head of the OSS, which was the precursor to the CIA. The Knights of Malta were very well connected to the CIA in a covert way as well, in the sense that the CIA would use the Knights of Malta as a way of infiltrating countries covertly without hindrance diplomatically. It's got full powers of statehood, including the authority to issue its own diplomatic passports.
That is similar to the Vatican, correct?
That's correct, yeah. The Knights of Malta has been referred to as the Vatican's intelligence arm. It's a very secretive, very powerful organization. And Frawley was a Knight of Malta and connected to the CIA top brass through the Knights of Malta. At the same time, he was also a member of the American Security Council, so directly connected to America's defense establishment elite.
The implication here is that any American agency that had an association with the Sovereign Military Order of Malta would have the ability to issue its own diplomatic passports and to travel around this planet without having to check in with any government.
That's correct. And the reason this is significant in terms of Frawley, the executives at Schick Razor, possibly or probably including Patrick Frawley, decided to set up a film company in 1970, Sun Classic Pictures, and they hired a guy called Raylan Jensen to head the studio, which is kind of interesting in itself. A pharmaceutical company starting a film studio is quite odd. But if you look at Patrick Frawley's history as well, he was the guy who owned, indeed established, I think, Technicolor Company. So he did have a history in film, and he also had a history in propaganda because he also had his own anti-Soviet propaganda radio station during the Cold War. He funded many anti-Soviet organizations from the 40s through to the 60s.
Doesn't that imply that Patrick Frawley had some sort of a counterintelligence role during World War II, and that no matter what business he went to in the United States, in this case, Schick Razor, being associated with Technicolor, that his counterintelligence role probably continued without interruption as he became an American businessman.
Yes, and it was people like Frawley. These are the guys who walk between the raindrops. These guys who are there in the background, they're incredibly powerful, but you can never really put your finger on what it is they do, or you can never really pin them down or attach anything to them. But they're the ones who are really pulling the strings on a great deal of important issues. Certainly Frawley was one of those guys. He did seem to be connected to Sun Classic Pictures. There's a slight problem with this theory. Try as I might, I've yet to establish exactly when Schick Raisers decided to establish Sun Classic Pictures and who made that decision. I've sent emails to current executives of Sun Classic Pictures trying to get some confirmation of exactly when the studio was established and who established it and whether or not Patrick Frawley himself was involved in it. And I have received a reply from one of the current executives of the studio. However, it was not a confirmation. It was basically, we don't know, and you'll just have to connect the dots. But I do think that there's strong circumstantial evidence to suggest that Frawley was involved and that Frawley was definitely connected to the CIA and the military-industrial complex in a big way. And that's, of course, relevant given the output of Sun Classics. Sun Classics did not just release Hangar 18. They released a number of very notable UFOs and religious documentaries and TV series and films from the early 70s through to the 80s. So Sun Classic Pictures decided to start releasing biblical TV shows. They made documentaries called In Search of Noah's Ark and In Search of Historic Jesus. They also started to release documentaries called The Outer Space Connection, which was based on the work of Eric von Daniken, focusing on the idea of ancient astronauts. They also made the Bermuda Triangle, and they also made a number of other UFO projects, as well as lots of paranormal projects focused on the idea of life after death. And in 1980, they made Hangar 18.
Who do you think would have been making that decision for Frawley?
It's possible that Frawley had some connections with a power group connected to the UFO issue at a very high level, and so he was acting on orders from that group or an individual within that group. This is complete speculation, I should say.
And that could be Majority or Majestic 12, depending upon which historic name is given us.
Possibly, especially considering that Nathan Twining, alleged Majestic 12 member, was also a member of the American Security Council, which Patrick Frawley funded. He was one of the main funders of that organization and was a board member of it, so probably would have known Nathan Twining personally.
Why do you think that very few Americans would ever have heard of the American Security Council?
Well, it's strange to get my head around what exactly the American Security Council was and is. It's still confusing even now because it kind of morphed into another organization, still called the American Security Council, but under different leadership, very right-wing think tank. It's very interesting. It was set up in the early 50s, I believe, and the original American Security Council, with the board members of Frawley and Nathan Twining and others, it was an extreme anti-Soviet organization. And as we know from the historical record, many, if not most, of such organizations during the Cold War were CIA front organizations. They were either established by the CIA or infiltrated by the CIA. Frawley was definitely one of the boys, and that's why his potential connection to the establishment of Sun Classic Pictures about UFO productions is so significant. Beyond the Patrick Frawley connection, there's something here which we've not even discussed yet. There was a Mormon agenda, a Mormon connection to Hangar 18 and to all of the Sun Classics output. And this is because Sun Classic Pictures was actually established in Utah, and it was completely Mormon-run. Everyone who was in any position of power or influence at the studio was Mormon, and all of the main writers, producers, directors who made all of their films were all Mormon. This is interesting because the Mormon faith is generally accepting of the idea that man is not alone in the universe. The Mormon faith have taught there are human-type beings living on other Earths in the universe, and LDS President Joseph Smith was quoted once as saying, "We are not the only people that the Lord has created. We have brothers and sisters on other Earths. They look like us because they too are the children of God and were created in his image, for they are also his offspring." Another LDS apostle, Neil Maxwell, is also quoted as saying that we do not know how many inhabited worlds there are or where they are, but certainly we are not alone. And it's also interesting, I think, that the alien beings in the film Hangar 18 are identical to humans, as has been taught in the Mormon faith.
Why do you think that the CIA, the Malta-connected people, and Frawley would then end up creating a Sun classic that would produce movies related to biblical literature if the truth is the avatars of history were extraterrestrial?
The assumption would be that a group of individuals within whatever organization, be it CIA, Majestic 12 or Majority 12, whatever you want to call it, has reached the conclusion that there is a connection between Christianity and other religions, perhaps, and that the ancient astronaut theory is more than a theory.
Another good story.
Well, George, just to kind of focus this down and make one more step. So Patrick Frawley at Schick Razor, with his, we'll call it counterintelligence background in the Cold War and associations that suggest that he was linked with the CIA. We know that he was a member of the Knights of Malta. He was the main funder and a board member of the American Security Council, in which General Nathan Twining was also a member. And General Twining is on the MJ-12 list of the leaked November 18th, 1952 document that is entitled Briefing Document Operation Majestic 12 Prepared for President-elect Dwight D. Eisenhower, Eyes Only, November 18th, 1952. And on page 4 of that document, which I'm holding, that was reprinted in my own book, An Alien Harvest, a long time ago, it says, a covert analytical effort organized by General Twining and Dr. Bush, meaning Vannevar Bush, acting on the direct orders of the president, resulted in a preliminary consensus that the disk, and they're referring to one at least recovered in Roswell, was most likely a short-range reconnaissance craft. And it goes on to say, a similar analysis of the four dead occupants was arranged by Dr. Detlef Brunk. It was the tentative conclusion of this group on November 30th, 1947, that although these creatures are human-like in appearance, which is completely different from other reports of grays and all of that, these are the ones where I've talked with people who said they look like small humans. The biological and evolutionary processes responsible for their development has apparently been quite different from those observed or postulated in Homo sapien. Dr. Brunk's team has suggested the term extraterrestrial biological entities, or EBAs, as an acronym. He adopted as the standard term of reference for these creatures until such time as a more definitive designation can be agreed upon. Since it is virtually certain that these craft do not originate in any country on Earth, considerable speculation has centered around what their point of origin might be and how they got here. Mars was and remains a possibility, although some scientists, most notably Dr. Menzel, and we know Stanton Friedman did a lot of work on the Menzel character, and that it appeared that he was working formally and officially assigned under this MJ-12 group to be a misinformer, like working counterintelligence as an astronomer at Harvard, to keep dissing the UFO phenomena while he was a part of this group that was trying to monitor and trying to analyze, and eventually, of course, their goal was to back engineer anything and everything that they could get from not just one, not just two, dozens of different craft in different stages, some perfect, some crashed, and get whatever they were back engineering into patents in United States corporations. And when we come back in the next half hour, you're going to hear even more remarkable insights beyond Frawley.
We are ready for it. Well, next hour, we flip the switch, and you will make phone calls with Linda Moulton Howe, conversations with Linda, questions. Perhaps you have a story that you want her to hunt down. When we come back, we'll continue this incredible story of the Hangar 18, what it all means. And welcome back to Coast with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, let's continue with this story. Go ahead.
Right. We'll talk a little bit more about what's been leaked in documents after we continue in this interview that I did with Robbie Graham about the CIA link to Sun Classic Pictures' production and release of that 1980 Hollywood movie, Hangar 18, and the 20th Century Fox production and release of the 1951 Hollywood film, The Day the Earth Stood Still. And here now we pick up with my going over one of my own experiences and exposure to a document with Robbie Graham.
There is this paragraph in that document that I was shown at Kirtland Air Force Base on April 9, 1983. These extraterrestrial biological entities manipulated DNA in already evolving primates to create Homo sapien. And that sentence would mean agencies in our government, going back to Frawley and before, would have been dealing with this implication that humanity was set in motion by extraterrestrial biological entities terraforming and interacting with planet Earth.
And that, Linda, is the plot of Hangar 18. As is revealed towards the end of the film, we find out that Earth has been seeded by extraterrestrials and that humans were made in the aliens' image and that they tampered with an evolving species on this planet in order to create humans as we know them today. The Hangar 18 plot is why the film is so interesting, especially given its corporate history.
Why test the waters in the 1980 time frame with a film such as Hangar 18?
I don't know, in short. However, throughout the 1980s, you had a lot of what I would consider to be disinformation seeded into the UFO community. There did seem to be right-wing ideals associated with this.
And yet, Robbie, the feature film Hangar 18 means that in 1980, a film was put out into the world public almost as a test of a reality that the government knew.
What I find interesting about Hangar 18 and also about all of the other leaks that came from the 1980s was that there was an emphasis on the ETs ultimately being quite malevolent creatures, or at least something to be feared. Even in Hangar 18, they are described as using human beings as slaves and that they were coming back to Earth to presumably reclaim it as their own and put us back to slavery.
Do you think that might explain why NASA refused to cooperate with Steven Spielberg when he wanted to do and did do Encounters of the Fourth Kind?
Yes. According to Spielberg, NASA declined assistance to Close Encounters because they feared that it would spark an epidemic of UFO reports and they didn't want the public on their back reporting UFOs. However, I think it's probably quite likely that if Spielberg's film had presented the extraterrestrials as being malevolent, as having a hostile agenda, then I think that it's much more likely that the US military would have been very interested in lending their support to that film, because then they would have put themselves in the position of being the heroes. Basically, they could show how the military would defend against an extraterrestrial invasion and encourage people to side with the military over potential alien visitors. If the ETs really wanted to show themselves, ultimately they would do it, regardless of any potential obstructions to that. However, it certainly can't help that they would know there has been a great deal of fear and distrust seeded into the popular consciousness about extraterrestrial visitation through Hollywood and the military. That would be some kind of a barrier, I suppose, to open contact, but it wouldn't prevent them from doing it if they really wanted to do it. I'm sure if it comes, they'll do it no matter what.
In your own speculation about this whole phenomena, what is your guess about why non-humans who might probably have been terraforming this Earth for millennia may be responsible for the Greek civilization, the Egyptian civilization, and the Mesopotamian civilization? Many nations accept that there is other life in the universe, including the Mormons. Why would telling the truth cause chaos on this planet?
I don't think we're ready for it. Ultimately, what the people who are in control of this subject, the real government, essentially a shadow government, which are tied into high corporate structures and think tanks. These groups who stand to lose everything, they're not thinking about this in terms of what can humanity gain, but what can we, special interest groups, lose if we do this? And it's special interest groups who ultimately have the say on whether or not this information is released to the public beyond the extraterrestrials themselves. The special interest groups are the ones who call the shots. They're the ones who have the technology and documentation. They have the smoking gun. If they want to release that, they can. But they don't want to release it because they have no interest in bettering humanity through the release of this information. They've found themselves in a position that's very precarious, it's very difficult. They're probably racked with fear and concern on a daily basis. How do you release this information, even if you wanted to, without fear of being publicly hauled through the streets and lynched or prosecuted? It's very difficult. So I think that if disclosure comes, it will be forced. It will be something where an act on the UFO beings themselves forces the government to disclose. And it won't be full disclosure, because full disclosure is too costly, it's too risky. It will be disclosure on their terms, and it will be disclosure in a way that does not overly incriminate them.
Hangar 18 has such a strong implication of a government capable of destroying people to keep the presence of non-humans from the public and the media versus the 1951, the day the Earth stood still, that would involve what I've been told, that it was a Central Intelligence Agency planted script specifically to test the public on the premise that there are extraterrestrial biological entities out there with great intelligence, great technology, and that they are able to bring down our power grids, but that they came with a peaceful intent.
Right. Well, you know, on the subject of the day the Earth stood still, and with regard to the comments that you heard from Air Force Intelligence during the early 80s when you were researching a documentary you were producing on UFOs, they told you that the day the Earth stood still was a test of public reaction to first contact, and it was a CIA production, essentially. Over the last few months, I've been conducting some more research into this, and I've actually found quite a substantial amount of circumstantial evidence that would strongly support what you were told as being true. Notable is Daryl Zanuck. Now, Daryl Zanuck was the production chief of 20th Century Fox during the time of the Earth Stood Still. Daryl Zanuck was in charge of an Army Signal Corps documentary unit during the Second World War, and he was actually at the time of the Earth Stood Still production. Daryl Zanuck was a board member of the National Committee for Free Europe, which was established by the CIA in 1949, ostensibly as a private anti-Soviet organization, quite similar to the American Security Council. As a star member of this committee, Zanuck was directly associated with this organization's executive committee, which included the future CIA director, Alan Dulles, the future US president, Dwight Eisenhower. In 1951, when the day the Earth still was being written, produced, and released, the president of the NCFE, the organization that Zanuck was a member of, the president of this was General Charles Douglas Jackson. Now, Jackson served as deputy chief of psychological warfare for the Supreme Allied Force during World War II, and would later be appointed as special advisor to President Eisenhower on the War on Psychological Warfare. He was described as one of the most influential covert strategists in America. This is Charles Douglas Jackson we're talking about here. Jackson referred explicitly about Daryl Zanuck, producer of The Day the Earth Stood Still, as being among the group of Hollywood, quote, friends, Cecil B. DeMille, Jack Warner, and Walt Disney, on whom the government could rely to, quote, insert into their scripts and into their action the right ideas with the proper subtlety. So Zanuck was described by the government's chief psychological warfare expert as being a friend who could be relied upon to insert ideas into their script. And that's all hard documented fact. Now, with this in mind, in light of what intelligence officers told you about the day the Earth still being a CIA test of public reaction, a memo from Daryl Zanuck to the movie's producer, Julian Blaustein, who was also a veteran of the Signal Corps, and screenwriter Edmund H. North. This memo was dated August 10, 1950. And in this memo, Zanuck stresses that every effort should be made to, quote, compel the audience to completely accept this story as something that could possibly happen in the not-too-distant future. Zanuck placed particular emphasis on the now very famous iconic scene in which Klaatu, the alien, lands the flying saucer in Washington, D.C. before emerging to address the public. And Zanuck advised the producer Blaustein and screenwriter North in his memo to, quote, treat this scene as realistically as you possibly can. And he even suggested that the scene should play out in documentary style. He said, quote, you should suddenly hear radio programs being interrupted with startling flash announcements from Washington, New York, and Los Angeles. The whole nation is listening in. This should be dramatized like the opening of a documentary film. Zanuck said that the audience must, quote, accept our entire project. And virtually all of his script suggestions were followed. So there you have the driving force behind The Day the Earth Stood Still, being directly connected to the CIA, to America's political and intelligence elite, the propagandists during the war, who fully understood the propaganda process. And this is the guy who signed off on the script and who, in his own memos, stressed to the producer and the writers this film should be ultra-realistic. That would support what you were told by Air Force intelligence officers.
Why has there not been a scene like Zanuck was stressing of out front extraterrestrial presentation of itself to this planet since 1951 and the movie was released?
Why haven't the ETs themselves decided to disclose their own presence? And the other question would be, why has the government not decided to do it?
Right.
I couldn't even begin to speculate as to ET agendas. They are enigmatic as ever. This is a subject which has just become increasingly complex as the decades have gone by. So, you know, from 1947 to 1951, when The Day the Earth Still was produced, it's a very short amount of time, and God knows what they were thinking. There was no reason that they would have thought that 60 years later this thing would still be secret. They would have probably thought, my God, these things are being seen in the thousands. People are seeing them from all walks of life, all over the world. There's only so long we can keep the lid on this, and probably any day now this is all going to be out in the open, and therefore we have to prepare for that eventuality. We have to start controlling or influencing how people perceive this phenomenon. We're going to have to try and acclimate people to this reality. We have to explore different avenues in which to do that. Cinema was one of them, and hence the idea that The Day the Earth Stood Still may have been an acclimation project. Note that in The Day the Earth Stood Still, there is no government cover-up. This is something that is sprung on the U.S. government as it is sprung on the general populace.
And so there's been an evolution from The Day the Earth Stood Still, when the movie was presenting the idea that there would be some sort of an advanced intelligence that would literally and physically land in Washington, D.C., with an android on one hand and a biological entity on the other that would have the ability to take down magnetic grids, but came here really to warn about what we were doing to the planet. And that, remember, at the end of the movie, George, it is Klaatu, the extraterrestrial, who is basically saying, this is a warning. And they leave. And then you jump to 1980 and Frawley and Schick Razor setting up Sun Classic Pictures with all of the behind-the-scenes link to the CIA.
And that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, the American Security Council, the Knights of Malta, and there is a great deal here. And in the next day or two, with Robbie's permission, I'm going to reprint in part three at earthfiles.com his whole article that goes beyond our interview. And I'm going to recommend to everybody listening that you also visit Robbie Graham's silverscreensaucers.com website. It's really excellent. There is a lot there. And on this whole question of what has been leaked in the past that is so relevant to the two movies that Robbie and I have been discussing, and then coming up to where do we stand in 2013 with a continual government policy of denial over something as fundamental as we are not alone in this universe, we never have been, and that there appears to be a tremendous amount of knowledge in our own government about ancient civilizations having been basically the basing of non-humans here on this planet. Where did they go? Why did they go? And will they come back? That is the theme of Hangar 18. Well, in my own case, as I have reported on Coast and at Earth Files and in my books and TV documentaries and all sorts of things, I was exposed to the alleged briefing paper for the President of the United States on the subject of unidentified aerial craft or vehicles on April 9th, 1983 at Kurland Air Force Base when I was working on the HBO special. And in those pages that were presented to me was a paragraph about extraterrestrial biological entities manipulated DNA and already evolving primates to create Homo sapiens sapiens. And there was another paragraph that said, Project Garnet, all questions and mysteries about the evolution of Homo sapiens on this planet have been answered and this project is closed. Well, in my book, An Alien Harvest, I also reprinted pages that really are very close to the subjects that I saw in that briefing paper on April 9th, 1983. And they came in something called Executive Correspondence, Subject Project Aquarius. And in one of the pages, it says Project Sigma. That was definitely in the document that I was shown at Kurland Air Force Base working on a was very clear. I was there as a TV producer working on a project for Home Box Office. There was no mystery about what I was there for or why when I was shown this document, allegedly, I guess, to provoke my interest, but also to see what my reaction would be to the startling concepts of Homo sapiens having been made by extraterrestrials. And in Project Sigma, reading directly, very close to what I had read myself back in 1983. Project Sigma, originally established as part of a project and the name censored in 1954. It became a separate project in 1976. Its mission was to establish communication with aliens. This project met with positive success when in 1959, the United States established primitive communication with the aliens. On April 25, 1964, the United States Air Force intelligence officer met two aliens at a prearranged location in the desert of New Mexico. This was fleshed out for me in that meeting at Kurland Air Force Base as being at the Trinity site at White Sands on April 25th, 1964 at 6 a.m. in the morning, and that they're in this effort through Project Sigma to communicate with some non-humans of some type, there was a mistake made.
What kind of mistake?
When Lonnie Zamora, in his police car over in Socorro, at 6 p.m., came upon a white egg-shaped craft and small beings outside and saw this blue flame and ended up driving up there, and there were holes in the ground, and he drew the strange symbol on the side of the egg. I was told that was 6 p.m. in the evening in Socorro, but they re-landed at 6 a.m., 12 hours later, at the Trinity site, which is what our government wanted in the first place. Now, there have also been discussions about some sort of a landing and a meeting actually down further at Holloman Air Force Base, but my information was that it took place at the Trinity site. Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso also had knowledge about the landing and a communication and exchange at the Trinity site as well.
That was one of the classic sites, wasn't it?
Well, I think so, myself, and there have been people who have argued, probably misinformers, for years. The April 25th, 1964 date...
Hold on, Linda. Let's come back. We'll talk more about that when we come back, and then we'll take phone calls with you. Final hour to go, Conversations with Linda on Coast to Coast AM.